So, hi everybody. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Nettie Lagasse. I'm the Associate Executive Director at NYISO, and this is the November 2021 Open Teleconference, and today we are talking about KBART. I'm recording the call for posterity, people who can't make it. And before we get into the discussion, I just have a couple of housekeeping things to cover. So number one is we're recording the call, so you and anyone else will be able to access it later. Number two is that the general format is we have a discussion with the speakers we've invited. Those are today talking about KBART, and then we open it up to questions. Although if you have a question in the middle of our discussion, you can feel free to ask your question at any time. We don't hold you back. However, I will say if you have a mute button on your phone, please do use it if you're not speaking. That helps with background noise and so on. And if you don't have a mute button, you can press star 6 on your phone, and that will mute your line, and the same star 6 will unmute it, so you can mute and unmute using star 6. And if there's a lot of noise coming from one line, I will mute you, and then I'll open the mute lines when we open the call. Let's see. I think basically that's it. We're just glad that you're joining us, and glad that our speakers are here today to talk about KBART. So, oh, and one more thing. We are recording the call, and we'll record in the discussion, but there will be a period at the very end of the call where I will shut off the recording. So if there is some question you have on your mind that you don't want to have recorded, there will be a moment at the end where you can ask your question with that attribute. So without further ado, we will get going. Thanks, the KBART Standing Committee members joining us today. There's five of you, so we're going to have a lot of KBART brains. Thank you so much. And I will ask all of each of you to introduce yourselves, and we said alphabetical by first name. So Andre, could you say your name and say a little bit about yourself, please?
Sure. Thanks, Nettie. My name is Andre Rothmacher. I'm the head of acquisitions at the University of Rhode Island Library, and I'm one of the two co-chairs of the KBART Standing Committee. I think I've been on the committee since 2016 or 17 now.
That sounds about right. And you've been a great co-chair. Jason, you're next.
Thanks. I'm Jason Friedman, Senior Manager, Heritage Services at the Canadian Research Knowledge Network. So it's a national consortium in Canada, and we manage KBART resources on behalf of our members for the content we license and produce. And so that's kind of how I got involved with the Standing Committee. And I didn't realize we were going to say how many years. So I think it's been maybe five, but
I can look that up. I can look that up in our system if it's a requirement. I can do that too. So, Noah, I think you've been on the group longer than either Jason or Andre. But Noah, can you say a few words?
Sure. Hi, all. So my name is Noah Levin. I'm an independent professional, and I am also co-chair of the KBART Standing Committee along with Andre. So I've been with the KBART group since I was running some quick calculations while Andre was talking. I think roughly 2013 would be my guess. Certainly when we were working on the phase two recommendations. So I was a part of that group was when I joined. And I've worked in the world of publishing, academic publishing, for roughly the last two decades or so.
Great. And Robert.
Hi, my name is Robert Heaton. I'm at Utah State University in Logan, Utah. I'm a collection management librarian. I joined the same time as Andre. I think it was 2017. But yeah, just kind of that fairly recent round of recruitment of library people.
Great. Thank you. And then last but by no means least, Sherry.
I am Sherry Mears. I am the director of EBSCO's Knowledge Base. I've been working with the KBART Standing Committee really since the end of phase one is when I joined. So I have no clue what year that was.
That was before 2011, I think.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So, but all of you are wonderful KBART experts and volunteer your time to work on KBART and help make KBART easier for other people. So we're really grateful at NYSO for all the work that you're doing on the standing committee and for our phase three, which is going to be kind of the focus of the call. I'm also, you know, I hope that people basically know what KBART is, but maybe something very high level. Who wants to answer? What's a knowledge base and how is it used by a library and by a provider?
I can take the first stab at that. So it's kind of an interesting question, but a long time ago, knowledge bases were really originally developed with the main function being to power A to Z lists and link resolvers. They primarily consisted at that time of journals and serials that a library or an institution subscribed to. Of course, over the years, they've grown and evolved. They now contain a lot more content than just journals. And many of the commercial knowledge bases power more than just the link resolvers, but discovery services, analytics, collection development. They've really evolved over time, which I think has also required the KBART to evolve over time as well. But yeah. It's basically the back-end system where an institution would set up all of their holdings, their online publications that they, you know, have access to or subscribe to that power a lot of those downstream library systems. But
good. Great. I think that's a good definition. If anyone wants to add anything, feel free to jump in. We'll also do a little round robin on why were each of you interested in joining the KBART Standing Committee, if you can think back to when you that time when you joined. What's in it for you? And Andre.
We could follow the same order as before.
That's a good idea. Yep, Andre, so you're first.
I think what got me most interested in KBART was KBART automation, actually. We have Ex Libris Alma, and I guess before it was even a official KBART automation, which is a different recommended practice, Elsevier kind of set up a system for libraries to be able to automate their holdings by doing a one-time setup, and then the knowledge base would talk to the publisher entitlement system and just set your holdings automatically. So you could, you know, buy a new package, press a button, and everything would be turned on in your library management system and therefore in your discovery system. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So that sort of led me to get excited about KBART and ultimately to the standing committee.
Great. Jason.
Yeah, thanks. So as I mentioned in our introduction, we at CRKN produce KBART licenses for KBART files, excuse me, for our members. And I'd sort of been working with KBART at my previous position in e-resources. And so I'd sort of started to develop, I guess, a bit of a taste for it and an interest in it and knowledge, and sort of wanted to understand a bit of maybe the bigger picture and also sort of represent our members. And as a consortium, I don't think there are other consortia who also produce these files, but not a lot. So sort of also interested in maybe bringing that perspective to the standing committee.
Great, thanks. Noah, why did you want to participate?
Oh, for me, you know, I think it's, I really almost have to go back to the very start of my career, even before KBART existed. And, you know, for me, when I first started metadata in publishing, at least going to different areas was I want to say newer concept, but it was definitely very Wild West. And, you know, I remember asking people like, oh, well, how does Amazon, which was a new thing at the time, or any of the wholesalers and so on? How do they get their information? And the answer in-house at a major publisher was, well, we don't really know. So I kind of just flew out to different places and asked them how this should work and what should we build. And I think that mindset is still the same for me. You know, I kind of enjoy looking at things and trying to create how it should work. So for me, KBART is really kind of an exciting area because it's, you know, it is very much a developing area within, you know, within the book and journal publishing world. So I still enjoy kind of that Wild West feeling of building, creating things and, you know, seeing it all then work correctly.
Cool. Excellent. Robert, what's your take?
I feel like we need to incorporate Wild West into a conference presentation title one of these days. So we'll think about that.
I think it's been done with KBART actually in the past, but
there you go. Where I worked in electronic resources and now in collections, I've just always, as long as I've been a librarian, I've always valued what knowledge bases allow us to do. You know, think about that package level and, you know, let someone else manage that metadata rather than go item by item. So I kind of want to give back to the NISO community for creating and maintaining the recommended practice, and kind of wanted to learn more about the technical side of, you know, how the supply chain pieces fit together, why the metadata, you know, sort of works the way that it does. The main thing that I've learned is that the recommended practice itself is pretty simple and manageable. And as we're working on phase three, we're really trying to keep it that way. That idea that you can look at it and say, okay, there's a lot of columns here, but I can understand what each one means and sort of make these decisions about what to do with it. And the more I can help content providers do that, you know, the more it helps my library too.
Yeah, good. And Sherry?
Yeah, much like Noah, my interest dates back to pre-KBART. And basically when I started at EBSCO back in 2002, I was tasked with populating and maintaining what became our knowledge base. And it was a continuous struggle getting the data and formatting it and getting it to a state that it was usable and just nearly impossible to explain to publishers and content providers what we were looking for and why. So when I heard about the NISO group forming the recommended practice for the transmission of that data, it was very exciting to me and something that I was excited to be able to point content providers to and help explain why it was important and what we were using it for, and that EBSCO wasn't just this like evil entity wanting your information. You know, it was, you know, very helpful. So I just wanted to be a part of it and have enjoyed it all these years.
We're definitely glad that all of you are participating. Getting into the meat of our discussion, so the KBART Standing Committee is now in the thick of working on its Phase 3 release. Phase 2 was published in 2014, which seems like it was yesterday. It doesn't really seem that long ago, but wow, that is 7 years, that's quite a long time. So it's phase three, I'm sure, will be quite welcome. Can you say a little bit about why a phase three is needed? And I know, Noah, you were going to answer that question.
Sure. So, you know, I mean, I think looking at KBART, you know, at phase one and phase two, both things were very well received. And so what occurred is you know, over time, so that was I am going to ask everybody to, if you're not already on mute, to please make sure you're on mute. Thank you. So with phase three, you know, it's been, as Nettie just said, it's been 7 years, and part of a lot of people adopting something means that it starts to be used in ways that maybe hadn't originally considered. The other part is, of course, the landscape has changed. So, you know, looking at things from anything from KBART automation, where that looks at, say, like kind of very holding specific information, whereas KBART was originally looking at not so much institutional holdings info versus also the media landscape has changed. You know, in 2010, 2011, we were not talking about, you know, video products and things like that as much, whereas now we are. So it's really, it was looking at kind of how the landscape has changed and then fitting into that and also what our own needs are and what folks are asking for.
Yep, good. What will be the general elements addressed in phase three? I mean, the group's already worked on several of them, and then there's still several in the future. And how is the standing committee dealing with all of these different projects? I wouldn't say it's a wide scope, but I would say it's not a mini scope. It's pretty substantive.
We started out with creating our work items, which we actually got approved by NYSO before we proceeded. So we have a total of 9 work items, and we've divided them up into hard, medium, and easy. And we do work on more than one at a time. So there's some that we've completed, some we're still working on, and some that we haven't gotten to yet. And just very briefly, what they are is one is clarifying the current recommendation. So KBART's not going to completely change. There's an awful lot that's going to stay the same. And so we went through the existing recommended practice, tried to clarify anything that was confusing or that we felt that we could do a better job on, and also provide more examples. And Sherry led that effort. And that's, for the most part, complete. We're going to look at the endorsement process, at how we endorse content providers as being KBART compliant. We might change that up and make sort of levels of endorsement, but we haven't yet started talking about that. One thing that we've just started diving into is new fields, because as Noah mentioned, there's so many more content types now, especially around multimedia, and we think that, you know, to incorporate that into KBART as we need to, we're going to need to add some additional fields to the file. And the same goes for international content as well. A fourth work item was creating a file guide. Anyone who's worked with KBART files knows that publishers or content providers are supposed to create a separate KBART file for each package that they produce, which is great, but it means there's an awful lot of KBART files and that can get confusing. So we've created some language around a file guide that will kind of list the files that a specific content provider produces and give some other information about the files, if there's anything new, if the file has changed, that will just make managing those files a lot easier for everyone involved. We've created a draft of some license language that libraries and consortia, if they choose, can add to their content licenses to request that content providers be KBART compliant and produce KBART files. And we've revamped the mission statement, and Noah touched on this as well, just kind of acknowledging that KBART is used for a lot more than it was originally created for. It's a very useful recommended practice, and everyone loves their KBART files and uses them in all different kinds of ways, and we wanted to acknowledge that. And then there's 2 additional things that we haven't started yet that we recognize will be perhaps a little bit harder. One is looking at alternative file types. KBART files are text files. They're very easy to work with. They're very unintimidating. Anyone can open them up in a spreadsheet. But we're wondering if maybe in addition to the text file, we should look at other formats like XML and JSON, because they have some advantages. And then finally, KBART only deals at the sort of level of the journal and the book. It doesn't go into chapter and article data, metadata. That tends to come from discovery systems. So KBART really can't handle that, and we acknowledge that, but we know that as more content is even starting to be sold at a more granular level, we need to figure out how KBART can indicate holdings when holdings are not at the big package level of the whole journal or the whole ebook. What if a library has holdings at the chapter level? How do we work with that? And so we're going to try to wrap our heads around that as well. So those are the phase three work items that we've identified.
Great, yeah, just quite a list. So maybe I know each of you have been involved in different of these elements. Could you each say a few words about the ones that you've been involved with so far? A little bit more in detail. And I don't know if, I don't know who would like to go first, so I'll leave it up to you.
I can go. So the main subgroup that I was working on is kind of helped head up was the clarifying of the phase two recommendations. So over the years, we've received a lot of questions and concerns from different content providers asking questions or asking how their data should fit into the model. So we took a lot of those questions that we'd received over the years, along with the style guide that we had created at one point, and went through them to try and really go basically through each section of the current recommended practice and ensure that the wording was clear and concise. We added examples where necessary. And then we also added some new elements, I guess you'd say, such as clearly defining the types of files that content providers should be supplying when they supply KBART lists. We added a section on publication history or title changes and modified the recommendations on gap coverage. We spent a good bit of time poring over the recommendations on the embargoes and tried to figure out how we could make that easier to understand and communicate in the files, because that's one area that has caused a lot of content providers confusion or concern. And then also tried to take a look at the verbiage we had around open access and freely available content. Added in a new access type for mixed or hybrid open access, and defined that, you know, how the files should be sent. You know, we would like a separate file for open access titles with the corresponding coverage and embargo information, that type of thing, to try and make the open access and freely available content more discoverable and more understood. So really just going through, making sure the wording was really clear, and as Andre mentioned, tried to put in some more real life examples into the phase two recommendations. We've gotten through all of it, at least first the subgroup went through, and then we've asked the rest of the standing committee to take a look at the changes that we've made. So we're still tweaking it, but we're getting there.
Great. So it's been quite a project in itself, I think. Other folks?
I'll mention that we've started looking at, and we're very much in the information gathering / research phase of what additional fields. As was mentioned, we're, you know, with adding non-textual content, then what types of new fields might be appropriate. And also, as was mentioned, the use of KBART files has sort of expanded beyond just strictly knowledge base entitlements to some extent. So what makes sense in terms of additional fields that might be useful, but still keep KBART fairly lightweight and also be realistic in terms of providers or content providers actually entering it. So that's kind of what we, like I said, we've just started looking at, and certainly there'll be quite a bit of research on our part looking at existing standards and trying to think of something that makes sense within in terms of enhancing KBART, but doesn't get us too far afield or out of scope or doesn't require too much intensity, so to speak.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge to make it still useful, but not more so than needed, I guess. Anyone else? Other aspects? Phase 3?
Yeah, I've worked with a small group where we've drafted some model license language. As far as I recall, the current recommended practice doesn't have any model language for content providers to adopt or for libraries to propose in their negotiations with content providers. So we want to just make it easy for anyone to insert KBART. You know, if that's important to you, then we'd like to, you know, see it reflected in licenses. So we went out and reviewed some various model licenses to see whether and how they accounted for KBART or other kind of metadata concepts. Honestly, there wasn't a lot of that, and so largely we started from scratch. But it just kind of took a couple of paragraphs that we've got drafted, and we'll kind of revisit it later in the process and fill that need with the understanding that will need to be adjusted to your library or consortium, you know, the different needs you have, the legal requirements of your jurisdiction or whatever, but just something to, maybe it's even more of a kind of promotional push to say, hey, this matters to us, rather than, hey, you know, we expect to pay less if you're not, you know, doing it and that kind of thing. But yeah, just to have a baseline so that institutions can have something to work with.
Excellent. Very good. As all of these different subgroups on the different phase three elements are working their way through, I have a very general question. What do you hope will happen next? How will we bring these things together? Or
I would say, from my perspective as a librarian, I'd love to see more content providers, large and small, adopt KBART automation. And I think that will really kind of shift the perspective around this kind of this whole metadata space. You know, they're tracking what customers have access to. So why not, you know, share that in a standardized automated way? And I think that also lends to automation of other things, you know, maybe integration with the new package IDs group and things with article and chapter level data. Like, I think that all kind of flows from standardizing that whole things.
Good. Anybody else?
I mean, I would totally echo what Robert says as KBART automation, if more providers would take that up. And it requires a lot of work on both ends, on the knowledge base end and the content provider end. So it's not like a switch can be flipped, but I'd like to see that too. And just for the, you know, for the information for the people attending, the process is we need to get through these different work items. Each one kind of results in a draft of a section of what will be KBART phase three. Then we've got to stitch it all together, make sure it flows. And at some point, hopefully not in the too distant future, we'll release a draft for public comment. And at that point, we'll probably try to have more open teleconferences and other attention getting activities to try to get people to give us feedback and comment and critique on what we've done. And then ultimately the recommended practice will be published. And then we'll probably take that on the road too, to just make sure that everyone knows that there is a KBART phase three and that we'd like people to get behind it.
Good summary. To switch gears, so KBART automation, is there anything else to say about that? I mean, I think you described it earlier, Andre, and then you and Robert both support it. I just don't want to leave it as any little orphan. Anything else to say about it, or with that?
Well, I know what I've learned about it is that, that it does require quite a bit of development work. So a content provider needs to be able to create KBART formatted files, but for each individual subscriber. So basically they have to do some development whereby their entitlement systems can generate those lists in an acceptable format and send them via an API to the knowledge base suppliers, who then have to ingest them. And it's usually on a weekly basis. So, you know, once it's working, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But I think it's been somewhat slow in adoption, just because it does take development work on each side. And so then, like, I know, for example, to name a name, Wiley is really close to implementing it with Ex Libris and with OCLC, but it's taken a little longer than they've expected, just because there is kind of programming work on both ends. And so it's unfortunate that it's a little bit hard to implement, but once it's working, and as Robert said, you know, as more content providers do it, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing for librarians. It just really increases accuracy and reduces the amount of tedious work we have to do to track our e-resource holdings.
And I'd just like to jump in from a publisher aspect, because of course, you know, it's always, you know, you always hear like, oh, well, this is great for the libraries and for the knowledge bases, which is true. It's also great for the publisher as well, for the content provider. So personally, having developed KBART automation and put that out with a publisher, that was something that was very worth the time. I mean, as Andre was saying, it does take time and development work, but I saw it as kind of a labor of love. This is something that is, and of course, the development time could be faster or longer depending on how your systems are set up. But you know, it's something that the way, and this isn't just KBART, this is any metadata requirement out there. The way it works right now is often these things are sent when the, you know, on a kind of institutional level, when the customer comes and asks you for it. And what that means, if the customer has called you up and said, hey, I need this sent here, what that means is that the customer is probably a little bit annoyed or fed up or just really has their hands full. So in this case, it kind of eases that through. And when you ease that through, that means you don't have the customers calling. And it's not like they're calling people like myself either. They're calling your various sales reps and so on who might not even know how to make these things happen. So what you do is you kind of smooth through that with a process flow that's very easy to follow. And it kind of just happens. And and once it's set up to work correctly, then it just works. So there's what happens from the content provider standpoint is therefore you're going to get better usage. You're also going to get a happier customer, and your customers are, you know, they themselves have their own budgets and what they're looking, and what they're looking to purchase. So, you know, and if I'm sitting in their shoes, I mean, if I have to make a decision between somebody that's easier to work with or somebody that's going to fill up all my time trying to make it work, you know, I'm going to go with the easier thing. So I do think it's something that is also a big boon to content providers and to really embrace doing, and is something that I embraced and really loved seeing it happen.
Great. Yeah. KBART automation is also a NISO recommendation that's published separately from KBART, but it's linked together on the KBART Standing Committee pages. Just to switch gears a little bit, KBART endorsement, how is that going? And what does a publisher need to do to endorse KBART, just plain KBART, not necessarily KBART automation? Someone?
So in order to, you know, in order to have your stuff endorsed by KBART, you basically send your files over to us. And, you know, what we do is we will then look at your files and, you know, basically, you know, see, you know, where it meets the recommended guidelines. And also my recommendation as well to publishers is if you think that your files are not yet there, that's not a reason to not send it. This is something I know I used to do all the time with everybody, whether it was KBART or Onyx or anything really, is I would send it over because it's also really good. It kind of also shows you where, you know, if your stuff is not ready to be endorsed, that's fine because it'll also show you the points that perhaps you need to, where work needs to happen. So that way you kind of save yourself some time trying to shoot in the dark and find those missing spots. You kind of get some good feedback basically on like, hey, okay, this part here needs work and that part needs work. So, but yeah, you basically send it over to us and then we do a review and we get back to you and let you know what parts perhaps need some work. And then we work with you through that until the files are ready for endorsement.
Good. Anybody else on that?
Sorry, no, I was just going to jump in to sort of reemphasize the point about us working with you and endorsement is wonderful and all that, but I think the real gain is from a publisher perspective is that your metadata is showing up better in the various discovery systems and, at the library level, people are finding what they're looking for. So endorsement is just kind of the cherry on the top to having better metadata, I think.
Absolutely.
And one more thing that just popped into my mind is one of the requirements of KBART is that content providers provide a separate KBART file for each package that they sell. And so that's something that being part of the endorsement process, I think maybe brings to some content providers' attention. Because as Robert said, when he talked about why he got interested in KBART, is that from a librarian perspective, being able to manage things at a package level with accurate data, holdings data inside that package is a huge time saver. So sometimes, as librarians, we see that in a knowledge base, a publisher will only have a single A to Z list, which is better than nothing. But if we were able to work with that content provider, we'd be able to let them know that, you can have more than one KBART file and that can correspond to the different packages you sell. And that will make people happy and make the holdings data more accurate.
So how can people on this call, all of our listeners, and participants, how can people on this call support KBART in these efforts? Of actions.
Send candy.
Caffeine.
Send caffeine.
Yes. Yeah, probably more down my alley.
No, I think Andre kind of touched on it too a little bit earlier when she was talking about the next steps of what we're working on, and just when we do send out the draft for public comment. Definitely want feedback and welcome all feedback. Also, if anyone on the call has any expertise in additional content types, not traditional, non-serial, non-book, reach out. We'd love to hear from you. I don't know, others.
And Nettie, what is the email address where people can reach us?
They can send a message to KBART, KBART at NISO, NISO.org.
Thanks.
I'll just add, it's probably preaching to the choir, but if you're not yet on the KBART interest group list, that's also a good way to learn more about KBART and also get sort of a good perspective on some of the thornier issues that can sometimes rise up.
Yeah, you can do that by, it's linked from the KBART Standing Committee page. So if you were to Google NISO KBART, that will get you to the Standing Committee page, and there's a link there to the interest group subscription. Anything else that any of you would like to add before we open it up for any questions? No. So, folks, if you're on the call and you've got a question for Jason, Noah, Sherry, Andre, and Robert, let us know. You can press *6 to unmute your line if you muted. If you don't have any questions, that's okay too. But yep, go ahead, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Tara Malone. I'm a faculty member and head of serials at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. And I am so new to KBART, it's embarrassing. But so I'm trying to get our first interaction, I guess, automation set up in Alma, Ex Libris Alma. Worked real great, worked perfectly for our journals, for Elsevier. I'm having to reach out to Ex Libris about the book's activation. However, I noticed when I was going through Ex Libris's Knowledge Center, which is quite large, I'm only seeing, and it could be things are in a million places there, I am only seeing three or four publishers that they're set up with, but my impression is that from talking to other reps, like say at Oxford, there are more out there. Is there a way to find out which publishers are set up with CAPART and for which knowledge bases? Like, is there any working list or
am I? If you go to the CAPART registry, which again is it's linked from the link that Jason put in the chat.
Everyone's on the phone, so they don't see the chat. So,
yeah, sorry. Nice,
okay. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I forgot about that too.
Sorry. If you Google Nice OK BART, you'll get to the CAPART homepage, and then you're looking for the CAPART registry. That's what Andre's.
Yeah, so the CAPART registry, so we put a little indication next to those providers that do CAPART automation, and we indicated which knowledge base. But you are correct, it's very few. So in ALMA,
definitely fewer than five right now.
Yes,
I believe.
In ALMA, it's Elsevier, Ovid, Springer, and ProQuest eBook Central, which is a little bit different. I don't know if that's strictly CAPART automation, but the big three would be Elsevier, Ovid, and Springer, because even though it's Springer Nature, right, I think it's only the Springer titles. So you're right. It is few, and let's hope that Wiley is coming very soon.
Wiley's coming very soon. That's really wonderful. And I had asked Oxford if they had for some of their journals CAPART set up with Ex Libris, and they said yes. So that's why I was like,
there's plain CAPART and there's CAPART automation. So that might be Oxford might be sending regular CAPART files to Ex Libris for certain.
As opposed to the automation. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But good to ask for automation, because whenever I see a publisher rep, I say, I want CAPART automation. And then I send them the email link to the CAPART automation recommended practice. And I say, you need to do this. So feel free to say that to Oxford a second time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So yeah, it sounds like we were speaking maybe about two different things. Okay, that's so very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Hi, this is Julia from Oxford. So I figured
excellent.
Just say hello.
Excellent.
Hi. So no, we do not have CAPART automation. We're in the process of doing a lot of the behind the scenes pieces. It is on our roadmap for completion within 2 to 3 years. We are talking with OCLC. We have not started our conversations with Ex Libris yet, but it is in process. So we are aware of CAPART automation, and it's nice to hear customers say they're talking to us about it. What we do have is all of our CAPART files in Ex Libris ALMA.
Yeah.
And there is a page, if that is what you are looking for, there is a page. Of course, I can't share on the Zoom chat because we don't have it, but there is a page on the ALMA knowledge base that your ALMA rep should be able to give you a link to that details out every single package, every single collection, and the collection ID for you to activate within your system, especially when you've just activated a collection, especially one of ours. And I'm believing if it's Leah, who's your sales rep, if you have any specific needs for those CAPARTs, please don't hesitate to reach out, because I'm happy to build a customized CAPART for you to help you out until we can finally bash all the heads behind the scenes together that need to be bashed together to make automated CAPART happen. Hope that helps.
I know it's a huge deal. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you were on this call. And Leah is my sales rep, and she is a rock star. She's really great. And we're in the process of some other things with Oxford, so this is really good timing. I will reach out, because I have not found that page. I have not seen that page, and we do not have an ALMA rep that I am aware of, at least. But it's fantastic to know that it's out there, and I will definitely work with Leah to see what's the next best thing while you guys work on that. And I'm really glad to hear that you guys are. Thank you so much.
It's called Integrations with External Systems within the Ex Libris Knowledge Center.
Okay, got you. I think I have seen that then. Thank you.
So if Wild West was already taken for conference presentation titles, I vote for Bash All the Heads Together for our next one.
That's a good one. Yeah, thanks for sharing that phrase. Great. Anybody else have any questions or other heads to bash together?
Before the next question, just a quick tip for OUP. Just quickly, because you were saying you hadn't started conversations yet for automation with Ex Libris and Alma. Just so you know, when I was creating automation for Springer, did talk to OCLC and Ex Libris Alma at the same time, and did that development work at the same time, although the release ended up separately because that just had to do with their own schedule. So, but their needs are roughly the same, or at least they were when I was touching it 2 years ago. So you might want to, if you have the bandwidth to do it, you might want to reach out to them because you can kind of do the same work at the same time for both of them, since it's mostly a duplicate effort. It'll
that's
save you a bit of time
heard.
In the long run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. That's what we've heard both from OCLC and Silverchair in terms of the API and the development behind the scenes. Is it is pretty much the same. So I assume at some point in time in the next couple of months, once we jump over the next piece of hurdle, and we're also in the middle of a platform migration. So once we can jump over that hurdle, that's the next discussion to hold is with them. But thank you very much for the help on that. I appreciate. I'm walking into this as a relatively new person in discovery, although I am a librarian, so at least I understand all the discussions. I'm working into it very new, so it's navigating the back channels of OUP as well, hence the bashing the heads against the wall sometimes.
Well, long ago I worked for OUP, so I understand.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
I think any place would bash heads, so.
Yeah, exactly.
The nature of the beast.
Yes, that's everywhere.
Any other questions, comments, reactions? All right, so I'm going to stop the recording.